Truth is, I am Iron Man.
They can be a great people, Kal-El. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses have started to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 88 of Behind the Panels, the comic book show that finds its solutions in the bottom of a bottle. I'm the slightly tipsy Richard Gray.
I'm the very sober David McVeigh.
And I'm billionaire philanthropist David Longo.
Yay!
In this issue, the Australian government gets in on the comics publishing business. The Aurealis Award finalists are announced and Batman gets a new boss. Then it's a bunch of new number one issues and the return of The Walking Dead in what we've been consuming this week. Plus, our kick-ass pick of the week, Iron Man, Demon in a Bottle, by David Michelinie, Bob Layton, John Romita Jr. and Carmine Infantino. This is Behind the Panels.
Tony Stark makes you feel he's a cool exec with a heart of steel.
As Iron Man, all just a place. He fights and fights with his armor race. A blazing armor.
As Iron Man.
A blazing armor.
Yeah.
Yeah, baby.
The truth is, he's Iron Man. Oh, man, that was very different era of Iron Man, which is very different era in this book as well. Iron Man 1979 bears very little resemblance to Iron Man 2014.
Or Iron Man 66, for that matter.
Yeah.
They could have called it Tony Stark's Bodyguard, really.
They could have, yes. They could have. That was the running thing that I think they've pretty much ditched now altogether. But
there's a whole lot of tropes around that era where they just sort of ditched them slow along the way, like Thor used to, you know, inhabit the body of, what's his name?
Donald Blake. There's actually a joke in this book, and we'll talk about it more, and we'll talk much more about this book in the actual pick, but I love the fact that this was an era where every superhero had to have an alter ego, had to have a secret identity. And even there's one point in this book where he goes to see Ant-Man, and he doesn't know who Ant-Man is, and Ant-Man doesn't know who he is, and they're talking.
I'll
like,
get my little friends on.
It's like, how did you know that?
That's when it was important for heroes to have secret identities. Now anybody just seems to find out left, right, and center.
Do you think Wrath of Khan just came out when this was made?
No, Wrath of Khan was years three. Before.
Wrath of Khan was 3 years later.
Because Justin Hammer looks just like Khan. In every drawing.
He does a little bit. Maybe he was based on Ricardo Montalban. Hmm. By the time you get to the end of this... Oh, no, this was all 1979, this one.
Yes.
By the time you get to the end of the Michelinie-Layton run, you're up to 1982. So they did about 3 or 4 years worth of Iron Man comics. And as we'll talk about in the pick, it's pretty much the definitive run in terms of all the stuff being set up for
this was the formation of Iron Man as we know him today. It was the 60s into the early 70s was a very different breed of Iron Man. This was where we started, and there's a whole bunch we'll talk about in the pick.
Well, shall I take us back to an even more different era for Tony Stark and Iron Man as I hit up the Wayback Machine for our vintage clip of the week.
Well, while the spider friends make themselves comfortable, the beetle plans to do just the opposite to Tony Stark.
He should be leaving any moment now. Yes, there he is.
Straight to Washington, Bascom. No stops. I've got the power booster with me. It finally works perfectly.
Congratulations, Mr. Stark. Something's wrong.
For you, yes, Mr. Stark. For me, everything's just fine.
There goes the beetle, flying off with Tony Stark, not suspecting that the famous inventor is wearing his latest invention, the incredible power booster.
There goes Tony Stark, not realizing that he's really Iron Man.
Can you say you've ruined all of Marvel Comics for me now?
Yeah.
Every time it's exposition, I'm just going to rate it as Stan Lee now. Yeah.
Always. Don't you already do that?
No, I don't.
Iron Man finds the bottle of whiskey.
Well, and he true believer.
Yeah, again, that was actually a little bit later. That was 81. That was from my favorite go-to cartoon, which was Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Tony Stark was at the center of that episode. That was the origin of the Super Friends episode. It's, you know, Stan Lee comes on at the start and goes, "We've our people have often asked us where they get all their money from. Well, this episode, we answer that question." Apparently, it's Tony Stark.
Yeah, apparently. Well, apparently, if you in this book, and we'll talk about a bit more about it, Tony Stark does seem to bankroll everything. So,
yeah. But, well, actually, leading up to this, and I'll talk about this a bit more when we get into the pick, that S.H.I.E.L.D. were buying out all of his stocks around this time. But this isn't the only thing we've read this week. We've done a lot of reading this week, and I think it's time that I hit this up.
Where? Looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Read between the lines, bitch.
Let's start with some of the new number ones that came out this week, because there were a few big ones. Really interesting one. I don't think either of you guys have read this yet. I just read it on the way here, actually, which was Royals Masters of War.
I have that on my iPad ready to go.
It's actually the first of six issues of a new Vertigo miniseries. So I read this one. I'll probably leave the other five until it's done now. But I wanted to read this one because I'd heard a lot of buzz about it. It's a really interesting concept. It's set just before the start of the Second World War. Rather towards the end of the Second World War. And it's about the British royal family. And people say, oh, you don't realize they have the power to stop this war. And you find out all of the Windsors have actually had superpowers throughout their whole history. And one of them finally decides to go public and use it to stop the war. And then, you know, the final, and minor spoilers, it's like, yeah, but he doesn't know what he's unleashed. We're not the only royal family that has powers, you know. So that's the setup for that. So that's a really interesting one to check out.
Tell me it's a UK-made book.
I don't actually know anything about the creators, to be honest.
It sounds like a UK-made book. It really does.
Some of the other new number ones that came out this week, one that you have read, there's two new Marvel ones. She-Hulk, number one, which is a new one by Charles Soule, with art by Javier Pulido.
Which is very similar to Mike Allred in many ways.
Very much so. But if you know Javier Pulido from another book, which is very similar to, which is Hawkeye.
Hmm.
This book's very, very, very similar to Hawkeye. Hawkeye, because it does the whole stay in the life of a superhero without actually mentioning any of the superhero stuff that they do. In fact, the one fight she gets into happens almost entirely off-panel.
Yes.
She just comes in after the fact and, like, Tony Stark's, well, that's a new good look for you. You know? And the whole thing is about her being a lawyer trying to get to the bottom of this case where the enemy seems to be Tony Stark.
Tony Stark, yeah, absolutely.
So it's a wonderful thing. And I love that scene where she walks in. It's like, yes, you're on an approved list of Tony Stark's visitors. And she's like, actually, I'm here about a legal matter. Please proceed to level 18. You know? And she goes up this long corridor. I am legal.
There's one guy sitting behind her. She goes, you're the legal part? He goes, no, I am legal. It's actually a really funny book. There's a wonderful panel I love where she gets basically quits, but she's being fired basically by the law firm she works for, because even though she's closed lots of cases, it turns out the only reason she was hired was because the law firm wanted all the superheroes as clients and she hadn't brought any of them. And so she gets very mad at this, storms out, then walks back in and with one finger just touches their wonderful, like, super expensive wood table, and it just splits in half.
I know. It's a lot of fun, this book, and it may not be for all tastes if you like a more traditional superhero book. And as you're saying, the art is very Mike Allred and that kind of style. So if you don't like that kind of style, you probably won't connect with the artwork. But I love that style. You know, yeah, it's my style.
For me personally, it's not my favorite art style. But in this particular case, the story and characters and dialogue is so charming that it completely overrides that. You're reading it for what is effectively a new Hawkeye book for us to enjoy, that style of book. The Superior Foes of Spider-Man, the Hawkeye, and so forth. This sense of humor that is coming through in Marvel, which is just
wonderful.
Yeah, and
the kind of the thing that you get back to that real core of what Marvel Comics are. It's superheroes that actually have to live in the real world.
You have lives, yeah, exactly.
You know. One of the other Marvel books that came out this week, which I know you said you read, Dave, was The Winter Soldier, The Bitter March, number one, which is a new miniseries that's come out. How good was this book?
It was amazing.
It was. It's basically a 1960s spy drama. It's a little bit James Bond. It's a little bit... you know, Cold War kind of espionage,
bit of like film noir as well.
Yeah. And it's very filmic.
Yeah,
it feels like, although there's moments where they go flying out of it, you know, they come crashing down to Earth and go, it's not like in the movies.
No.
You know, bones break, yeah. You know, and things like that. And the Winter Soldier actually forms a minor part of this book. It's actually about these two agents. One of them's Nick Fury,
and it's Agent Ran. I think
Agent Ran, yeah. And they're basically having a competition to break into this place to rescue this German.
It's Castle Hydra, right?
Yeah, it's Castle Hydra, and they're trying to get in to get these ex-Nazi, you know, spies or something to get them, break them out, and that's when the Winter Soldier intervenes.
At this point, I haven't read this book yet. I've only read the first couple of
pages. It's set in the 60s, we should say.
So it's set in the 60s. Is the Winter Soldier still a bad guy at this point, or is he a good guy?
I think so. It's not really that clear yet. Would you say, Richard?
It's not, because they've literally introduced the character. We don't know what his motivations are. Because
if they're going back to the Winter Soldier as his original incarnation, this will be very interesting.
So. I think so. That's what I would say. But we have to wait, I guess.
Fair enough.
But it has this awesome, like, adventure serial kind of tone to it. You know,
I'm looking forward to finishing it. As I said, I just didn't have time to finish it this morning. So I will be looking forward to finishing that one off this afternoon.
Some of the other number ones that came out this week. I'll talk about the other Marvel number one that came out this week before I move on to some of the other ones. This one was X-Force number one, because we needed another X-book, like a hole in the head.
God.
There is a real sense of humor to this book as well. And I don't mind it too much. I actually found it hard to get into. This is Spurrier is the writer on this. Simon Spurrier is the writer on this one, and this really cool upcoming artist, Rocky Kim. Has amazing looking art. So it's really, really cool, slick. This sort of painted sort of art that looks really, really next level.
That might be worth having a look at, yeah.
The sense of humor in it's great, because there's a lot of things in there, like, you know, I've taken a vow of non-killing, and then, you know, someone makes a few, this character Phantom X, which is kind of like he seems to be like, you know, a 21st century Gambit, keeps making quips, and she goes, you know, I'm reconsidering my vow of non-killing at this point. You know, things like that. So it's this dysfunctional team that's got Phantom X, Psylocke, Cable is in the team, as well as another character called Marrow, who's a character who's lost her mutant
powers. So the giants of the X-Men world is
saying. You know, it's not it's not one of those essential books, but it's probably more than what you expect it to be. Talking about number ones, Image had two number ones out this week, and, you know, it's always worth looking at what Image has got coming out. The Fuse number one, this is by Anthony Johnston, with art by Justin Greenwood, and interestingly enough, letters by Ed Brisson. Ed Brisson is the guy that's writing Sheltered for Image at the moment. He's doing the lettering on this, so I thought that was quite interesting. I don't know if he's got any story input into it. This is basically, if you like the idea, if you like sci-fi, and this seems to be an area that Image are moving into a lot lately, it's about a cop who voluntarily goes up to this space station type thing, which nobody goes to unless they have to, and he volunteers to go up there. And we suspect, you know, we find out he's running from something. We don't know whether it's a girl or whether it's a job or something that's happened on Earth. And it's this weird mix of cultures up there, and there's basically the homeless up there are called Cablers, and one of them winds up dead, and they're investigating that. And his partner that he is this old woman who's nearing retirement. So they're basically going to have to fire out of a vacuum lock to get rid of her at this point. So, you know, it is a really, really, really interesting concept. The other Marvel book that came out this... Sorry, Marvel. The other...
Image
book that came out this week is another one called Mercenary Sea. And this is one that's set just before the Second World War. It's got a real, you know, pulp boy's-own adventure kind... Not boy's-own adventure, but an old-school adventure kind of vibe to it. It's got some really, really, really lovely art. It's about an ex-bootlegger named Jack Harper running, and it's kind of a very, very, you know, almost formulaic story where they have to take on some people. It's a bit of a milk run, but, you know, something's going to go wrong. And I really love the way, because it's got all those kind of classic, you know, adventure story characters from the, you know, the 30s and 40s. You know,
this did look like an interesting book. I'm actually curious to have a look at this one. So
the artwork looks really cool. Looks like a Saturday morning cartoon in a way.
Actually, it's funny you should say that, because the artwork is quite cartoony in a lot of ways. Not cartoony in the sense that it's like outlandish and unrealistic. It is actually, and the way it's been coloured makes it look like it's been cell animated. So it's really, really interesting kind of book. I definitely want to check out the next issue, and I think each issue is going to end on like your traditional pulp cliffhanger kind of thing. So really, really enjoyed that one as well. Two books we can't go without talking about are the Bat titles.
Now, I actually read both of these titles, and I got to say, my favorite out of the two has got to be Batgirl.
Surprise!
Damn straight. No, look.
No, I got to say, Batman at the moment is leaving me a little bit cold. Mm-hmm. Although I will say
This issue particularly left me a little cold.
The only thing that this issue...
At least it was a quick read, this one.
It was a quick read, but the only thing that really was interesting at all is that one of the things we've speculated for a long time was that Harper... Is it Harper?
Harper, yeah.
Yeah, Harper character becoming his sidekick.
Riddle me this. The previous issue ended with Batman drowning in a vat of something, and then this goes to this is going to happen sometime in the future.
This is
but the whole thing is promoting the upcoming Batman Eternal.
But is Batman Eternal like the second part of Year Zero?
And yeah, I think it is a little bit that way, because it does seem to be moving that way. But then Harper, if Harper Row is working with him now, then surely it's set after.
Yeah,
I don't know. Look, as far as I'm concerned, I look at it and go, Zero Year went way too long.
It's not even finished.
No, it's not finished. Now we've jumped to the future. It's like, can we just get back to Batman?
The opening page was like, this is happening soon. It's because they've got this Eternal thing coming up in April, and they're plugging it. The front cover actually says a preview for Eternal. So basically the whole book is an ad for that, which in and of itself is not a bad thing, but we don't have a consistent story at the moment.
But what we can do is, at this point, we can completely blame Forever Evil, because Forever Evil is just
we can't blame Snyder for it, because his actual writing is good. It's just that the direction is just sort of leaving us all over the place.
However, what gets me about Batgirl, though, is the fact that Batgirl is still within the same continuity, still within the same time.
Gail Simone has had to deal with all those things, and she's actually played ball and gone off and done the single issues crossing over into... You know, Villains Month, crossing over into Gothtopia, crossing over into all those things. But still, she's managed to keep her...
And if Forever Evil is running right now, why is that not affecting Batgirl, but it's affecting Batman? Why can't we just get back to it, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway,
Batgirl is a wonderful, wonderful issue. It's the start of a new arc.
Yeah.
Introduces a new villain called Silver.
Who is intriguing as
really,
hell.
Really, really, really intriguing. And particularly that final frame where you're left with a cliffhanger... And it's just wonderful. Back, it gets back to, because one of the things that we've finished and what we talked about, I think it was back in issue 26, before the Gothtopia thing, was that whole first 2 years worth of comics came to a close with her almost revealing to her dad.
To her dad, yeah, absolutely.
Who she was. But it brought to that whole Jim Gordon and Batgirl are enemies kind of arc, and that whole duality that she'd been leaving up until that point. That sort of comes to a close of sorts.
Mm.
And now she can move forward and... You know, page for page, Simone's been bringing it every issue, and I love this.
This is an intriguing book. I mean, have you read Batgirl at all? No,
not in a few issues.
This is an intriguing book because the Silver character.
With DC, I kind of have a rule at the moment where I'm just letting them pile up.
Not reading it. Yeah,
I'm just waiting until there's some forward momentum going on in it.
What I love about Simone's storyline here is basically the Silver character is a self-created vampire hunter, basically, and believes that the Bat family are vampires. And
he sees them as
vampires. So when you see it through his eyes, they've got fangs and blood and all this stuff. And he's out there trying to stop their reign of terror.
That's cool. Yeah.
And it's a really interesting arc. And the fact that she's teamed up now with a Talon as well, which I think of the female Talon who's part of Birds of Prey, I think is fabulous.
So the fact that Simone is dipping back into those stories that she had to cross over into, but she's using it to her advantage. And I think that's a real strength as a writer. That you can say, yep, look, I've had to contend with all this stuff, but I've now got some more tools I can use.
Yeah, which is like, it's funny because that is like almost an equivalent to an editor.
Yes.
And like, I think like DC needs better editors. Like Scott Snyder needs an editor.
Yeah, well,
overridden.
There is a new Batman group editor coming in, which we'll talk about coming up in the news storyline. And it's actually from what I understand, it's his same editor that he has for American Vampire and The Wake and all those kind of things. So it's we might actually get some of that strength coming back into the Batman titles. Yeah. I agree.
The other book I wanted to mention very quickly, which isn't on your rundown, but I also read Supergirl, I think it's 27.
Okay, that wouldn't be the latest one, though, would it?
No, so. It's the most recent one out at the moment.
She's Red Lantern now.
Well, that's right. But what was really interesting was that what I realized was that this Supergirl, because I was actually an issue behind, is the issue where we're heading into that territory. And they've been building Kara basically as this angry young girl who basically can't find her place in the world.
Mm.
And this is where they've introduced Lobo as well, this new Lobo. And she basically kills Lobo in a past issue. She punches him so hard that she kills him. Not meaning to. She just has no idea how to control her powers. And she takes Lobo to that underground scientist who plays around with Superman a lot, you know, the girl with the cane. And they're dissecting Lobo to try and see what makes him tick. But of course, Lobo heals, and he basically starts this rampage trying to stop and trying to find his way out.
And he frags all those bar stitches.
And basically. But what's really interesting is that Kara gets furious at all this because he's gone crazy. And she comes out and she steps into the light. And I just want to show you this last panel because she basically says, last time I killed you by accident, she goes, this time you've got it coming. And this is Supergirl in the last panel. So you can see exactly why
she's
heading to Red Lantern.
That is awesome. That is exactly the amount of like distribution of words and image that Scott Snyder needs to have.
Yeah, so basically...
Those last couple of issues were pretty wordy.
I still can't get over it. I've got a grudge now, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've got to move on really quickly. I will mention the other thing that came back this week, of course, was The Walking Dead Season 4.
Mm.
I know, David, you're saving these up for some reason.
At the moment, it's actually a matter of time. Now that you've told me...
Okay, so we're not interested in what you've got to say. Dave, what do you reckon?
Bite me.
Keep it clean.
I don't know. I don't know.
I thought it was a really interesting episode because it was a very quiet episode.
I couldn't get past how bad Chandler Riggs is as as Carl.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just think
he's eating the pudding.
Yeah, not sharing that pudding. That
that
was a lot of pudding that he didn't share.
It was
Rick.
Like 4 kilos of pudding or something.
I don't know. It was a really quiet episode and subtle, which I really liked. I think,
and we got some backstory on Michonne, which is interesting.
And it was the power team of The Walking Dead. It was Greg Nicotero directing, Robert Kirkman writing, and anyway, I can't remember the other element. Yeah. But it was Kelly Dixon editing. Yes. So like it was the best team possible for the show, and it was really good production wise. Just I think that kid Chandler Riggs is proving that he doesn't have the chops to carry the role of Carl.
Look, it's back now. And
they should shoot his eye out, I think, really soon.
Spoiler, sorry.
if you're not up to date in the comic. But to be fair, you'd have to be
Rick,
about it.
Rick was so good.
You'd actually have to be about a year or so behind to not know that that happened. Which I was up until not too long ago, to be fair.
He doesn't die. Like, this is not a spoiler.
No, they did some weird things by the time they got to that stage in the comic. Just really, really quickly.
Dave just gave me the weirdest look, so you guys know.
All I'm going to say is, bloody hell, bloody hell.
And just bringing this back to normalcy for a second, next week we've got some big comics coming out as well. Harley Quinn, third issue. Well,
yay!
Actually not bringing it back to normalcy in any way whatsoever. There's a Justice League 28 coming out. Dark Horse have got a new one coming out next week. Actually, when I say next week, it's probably this week for you people because this show comes out this week.
True.
White Suits, number one. These are the books that are coming out on the 19th of February. The White Suits, number one from Dark Horse. New Warriors from Marvel. So this is going to be a Nova starring book. The old New Warriors, which was a staple of the 80s and 90s, is coming back.
Absolutely. First the Intruders and now this. Huh? So.
Well, we've also got Daredevil number 36.
Not Intruders, Invaders.
Invaders. All new Invaders. Daredevil number 36 coming out, which is the final issue in Wade and Somni's run for this volume before they reboot it in a couple of months' time. But as a result, we are going to be doing that as our pick of the whole run. As our pick of the week next week.
How today are you, Dave, on that?
Oh, I asked him before. He's two issues behind.
Excellent. Beautiful.
So Iron Man Annual coming out next week. IDW's got something called Rogue Trooper number one. Image has got a new book called Undertone number one. But the book that I have to plug harder than any other book is our good friend Laramie Taylor's A Voice in the Dark issue 4. This is a corker. Go out and buy it. Get your friends to go out and buy it. Get it on Comixology.
Support this book.
Support Laramie Taylor, because he has nice things to say about us,
yay,
like Behind the Panels isn't just a comic book podcast for Australia. It's one of the best anywhere in the world. Funny, in-depth, and more insightful than most shows. The kindest words that we've had about from anyone. And Laramie, we're proud to call you a friend of the show, and we want people to go out and buy your book.
So Laramie will actually be on this show in about 2 months, actually. 2 months. Because when Kick-Ass 3 finishes up, we're bringing
that's
him
right.
In,
well, there was a Kick-Ass 3 issue 6 came out this week, but I didn't read it because I'm saving it. I like
to
read those.
We're holding on to them. Yeah,
I like to read those. Can I just say that about The Walking Dead? Like, a new Walking Dead came out this week, too. It's been fortnightly with the all-out war.
That's right, yeah.
And I'm a huge fan of the comics still, but we didn't talk about it because we're banking up. The all-out war until it's done, so we can read
that's
it
exactly
as one
what I'm doing,
epic.
Yeah, because you can not whip like, through those Walking Dead pretty quickly.
Totally, and I'm just such a fan that I want to read it as one sitting. Mm. Yeah, and to finish up,
it's kind of like reading Waiting for the Trades. Really.
Absolutely, yeah. And Walking Dead's such a big thing, so we should talk a little bit more about the episode just really briefly.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
That I really like where it's heading, and I think this is a really good start.
I think they're really setting up some pieces. I think it was good. It was an odd move coming back from mid-season break with a very character-based story, but it was such a good one that I didn't think it was detrimental at all. And it came back to something ridiculous like 15, 16 million viewers.
Really? Mm.
So this just keeps going from strength to strength and audiences realize how good it is.
Speaking of comic book television, can I just tell you how frustrated I am how far they're spacing out Arrow and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. right now?
I don't know what the US seasons do. It's like we come back from a two-month break, give you two episodes, and then take another month off.
I know. It's ridiculous at the moment. Just when you start getting into a flow of Arrow, it goes, and it'll be back in 3 weeks.
And
it's
then they will complain. It's like, well, we can't find an audience. No, because the audience can't find your show. I think it's time for some news headlines. Marvel will be giving Cyclops his own series in May with writer Greg Rucka and artist Russell Dauterman at the helm.
To coincide with the return of Peter Parker, spoilers, writer Dan Slott and artist Ramon Perez will revisit the web-slinger's earliest days in The Amazing Spider-Man Year One Learning to Crawl, that's a mouthful, a five-issue miniseries commencing May.
May will also see DC launch the crossover event Superman Doomed, beginning with a one-shot and continuing in the other Superman titles that month.
Following Mike Mart's move to Marvel, Vertigo editor Mark Doyle has been named new Batman Group editor for DC Comics.
There's Snyder's new boss. Will Eisner Comics Awards Hall of Fame for 2014 will automatically induct Irwin Hassan, Sheldon Moldoff, and Oren C. Evans this year. Other nominees for the Hall of Fame include Dennis O'Neill, Alan Moore, and Hayao Miyazaki.
The unlikely pairing of Image Comics Chew and Revival will also see a crossover happening in May with the release of a single issue event.
May is going to be huge. The finalists for the 2013 Australian Aurealis Awards have been announced. In the illustrated book or graphic novel category, nominees are Tom Taylor for The Deep Volume 2, Vanishing Island, Steve Carter and Antoinette Ryder for Savage Bitch, Tim Malloy for Mr. Unpronounceable Adventures, Jackie Ryan for Burger Force, and Shane W. Smith for Peaceful Tomorrows Volume 2.
Avengers
Age of Ultron
has begun production in Johannesburg. Rumors abound that Wakanda may make an appearance.
Valiant Comics have announced 7 new number one issues between May and September. Creators include Matt Kint, Robert Venditti, Doug Braithwaite, Jen Van Meter, and Kano.
In related news, Marvel Studios head Kevin
Feige,
thank you, has hinted that a Black Widow solo film is in development.
The cast for Fox's forthcoming Gotham TV series continues to grow with Sons of Anarchy's Donald Logue announced as Harvey Bullock. He'll join Ben McKenzie as Jim Gordon, Sabrina Guevara as Captain Essen, Aaron Richards as Barbara Keane, Sean Pertwee, I almost said Barbara Gordon, Sean Pertwee as Alfred Pennyworth, and Robin Lord Taylor as Oswald Cobblepot, a.k.a. the Penguin.
The CW has announced that Arrow will be renewed for a third season.
Yay!
It must be hit. Oh, no, I'm not going to read that.
It must be hitting all the right targets, David.
Who writes this stuff? Oh, yeah, you do.
Finally, the Australian government was in hot water this week as a propaganda comic they commissioned to target refugees confirms their policy of turning back the boats. Guys, we all had a quick chance to have a look at this just before the shows. This thing is horrible.
I'm going to sum it up in one word, and I'm just going to say disgraceful.
Look, this is not least of which the amount of money that's spent on this.
Not really.
We're like, well, it's better than anything DC's. No,
did Scott Snyder write this?
Yeah, right. No, I think it was Scott Lobdell. but it was, it's an odd comic because the comic is basically, it's about a factory worker in an impoverished Middle Eastern country deciding he wants to move to Perth, apparently. And his parents encourage him to go there. He decides to head off, illegally enter via a boat, but he meets the well-armed and well, you know, protected and well-uniformed Australian border security who pat him down and send him off hanging his head in shame to a detention centre. What this is basically saying is it's ignoring the fact that that there are refugees doing this. It's basically saying the only people who are doing this, people go, you know what, I think I'm going to sneak into Australia today.
It also goes against everything the government has ever told us.
It's also explicitly telling us that they are turning back the boats. There is a policy of turning back the boats. And it also just completely, it basically says, you know, don't come to Australia because you'll... As I think The Guardian says this, in fact, and I have to quote this. This is from, confessed conservative Mark Fletcher, who writes for The Guardian Australia, who says, for years we've heard the coalition's rhetoric was that a strong border protection policy was to prevent the loss of life at sea. Hockey wept. Now the government tells potential asylum seekers that the reason not to come to Australia is that you might encounter Australian officials. This is nothing but shameful.
Also, the last panel shows them in a tent, in a row of tents with his head hung in shame, and yet all the footage we ever see on TV about asylum seekers, the detention camps are nice cabins and they're supposed to be well treated. So what are we at? What is the story here? Are we really just putting them into concentration camps with tents, or, you know?
It's such a mixed message to start with, but obviously it's very, 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 very propaganda. Base. Mm. This is actually on the customs.gov.au website if you're looking for a really...
It's like a triumph of the will kind of stuff, hey?
It is so bizarre, this comic. And obviously, presumably, it's printed and handed out to people as they're...
Now, we must also point out, there's no text.
There's no
because,
text.
Because of it being for all immigrants, obviously.
Yes.
It's all told in pictures. And quite frankly, if you read through it, it is actually quite confusing.
Yeah.
Because at one point when he's dreaming of Perth, it's not actually him dreaming of Perth. It's some guy telling him about Perth.
Joking about Perth. You know? Saying, you should go to Australia because the economy is better there, particularly in Perth.
Where yeah.
Though I like this. There's a parody version of it that was posted on Bleeding Cool. Where they put text into it, where the father's telling him, Abbott's killed the car industry, but is offering $100 to act in a graphic propaganda novel. But he has no compassion. He'll just dehumanize me and use me as a symbol, he says. And then it goes on to say...
How's it going, mate?
His father's coming home. How's it going, mate? Great news. Channel 7 will double the government fee if you all look regretful for the cameras. And then when he's hanging his head in the shame, he's like, I'm sick of being used as a pawn. So look, you know, this is a horrible, horrible, horrible story. The worst thing about it is that apparently the book is part, according to the northernstar.com.au, it says the book is part of a $2 million contract that led to a Hong Kong-based company that has previously given the government advice that withdrawal from Afghanistan would spark a fresh wave of asylum seekers, fearful the Taliban would again seize control of the country. Now, as somebody pointed out, my many, many, many people, friends who write comics on Facebook pointed out this week, for $2 million, you think they could have gotten better colorists for this thing.
I also have another thing, slightly more disturbing than that, though, is that so the government is getting advice from a company that makes comics.
Look, I don't know
about
what's going
withdrawing
on.
From Afghanistan.
I don't think they're a company that makes comics. I think they're a...
they're a PR company.
I think that they're... they may not be a PR company. They're probably one of those big multinational conglomerate
it's
things.
It's terrible stuff.
We don't normally get too political on this show. This is our fun show. But if you look at all this stuff mounting up and you go into the polls in a couple of years' time and vote for this government back in, then you're part of the problem. Mm. And I'm declaring that. I don't care.
And we're probably going to lose some listeners over which direction we lean politically. And look, I'm really sorry if you feel that way because comics are not about being political.
No, but comics are about politics. And in fact, the book that we're doing this week is very political.
Well, that's true.
It was for its era.
But at the same time, we should all be able to talk rationally about all of these things. The bottom line is, it's kind of bipartisan at the moment. Australia has some really messed up anti-immigration policies, both Labor and Liberal at this point, Liberal being a little bit more hard-edged. But the bottom line is, we've got this really messed up opinion of refugees at this point.
Well, this is the thing.
Time.
They're not called refugees. And the whole point of this story is that the comic is trying to deliberately change the dialogue around this from, and which is what the Abbott government and indeed the Howard government before him were doing, was trying to change the dialogue from them being refugee seekers, you know, asylum seekers and refugees, to illegal entrants.
Yeah,
that's actually the term that they use here. So it's basically saying, no.
The fact that they think they can distill it down to a 6-page thing is exactly.
And what everybody seems to be forgetting is that most of our Western countries, including England and America and Australia, our foundation is built on immigration. Look, our foundation.
We're a nation that's less than 200 years old. We're all the descendants of boat people.
Absolutely.
You know,
or criminals in the case of Australia.
Quite literally. Yeah, exactly. Quite literally. Like anyone who's been here for a number of generations came. Like, you know, for in my case, my family, we're not the first fleet, but we've been out here since, you know, the 1800s, and we're quite literally boat people. We were immigrants. And, you know, half the family came from convict stock.
And you know what? You know? We actually have a lot of
my
room
here. My
family
immigrated here as well.
There you go. Yeah.
We have a lot of room here.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
we're
it's
a
not
big,
like,
brown, flat country.
Yeah, it's like, I think we can fit them. You know what I mean? It's like,
you know, I find this whole thing abhorrent, and I think it had to be mentioned, because not least of which, we're offended as comics readers.
Absolutely. Yeah. How dare they use our medium?
Yeah. You know, Archie and Veronica Blood.
And where is that clip?
I don't have
it. Our medium is incredibly powerful for this kind of political statement.
Archie and Veronica Blush.
Thank you.
Yeah, just ask Alan Moore about it. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And look at the book we're about to do. And look at before that, Green Arrow, Green Lantern, we didn't get to that part, but the part where we get into heroin addiction.
Yes.
And you know, look at some of the messages that have been delivered in comic books and how we've instigated change through that vocal medium. And to then turn around and abuse it.
Well,
like
comics
this.
Have always been used as propaganda, but... You know, nothing as blatant and government-funded as this in peacetime, you know.
I think there was a point raised by my lovely wife, Katie, when she was in here, which was, you know, bottom line, no Australian artist would have done this for them.
No one would have done. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, the Australian comics community is rebelling against this, and for good reason. But we should probably move on to our pick of the week so we can talk about a slightly simpler time.
Yes.
Well, see how you like this. What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week. Considered by many to be the definitive Iron Man story, David Michelinie, Bob Layton, and John Romita Jr.'s historic run on the Invincible Iron Man introduced James Rhodey Rhodes, rival industrialist Justin Hammer, and arguably Tony Stark's greatest enemy, alcoholism. Originally published in 1979, Stark sees enemies coming at him from all sides, but the hardest one to beat is his own human frailties. This is Iron Man, Demon in a Bottle.
I think we've used that music a few times now.
Yeah, this is the first time we've used the instrumental version. We're talking about Iron Man. We have to use some Akadaka, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, we're being Australian. We call it Akadaka.
It's funny how like that song has been so famous for so long, but now it's synonymous.
It's Iron Man.
Yeah.
This is, as I said in the intro, this is pretty much the... definitive Iron Man story in a lot of ways, because apart from the fact that Iron Man 2 very much loosely bases its plot on this book, as I said, it introduces so many characters. The David Michelinie run actually started that this creative team, Michelinie, Layton, and John Romita Jr., who was 17 or 18 when he started drawing.
Wow, all right.
He actually started his professional career at 13.
When you've got a father like John Romita, come on.
Yeah, well, that's right. But I mean, it's like, you know, you could say nepotism, but then you look at the quality of his art.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Okay. Like the dude earned his stripes, you know? But you look at this, right? 5 issues before they started their run on this, issue 118 of the Invincible Iron Man. I've got this all collected together in the Iron Man Omnibus, which is phenomenal. You basically see the start of his alcoholism. The storyline leading up to this is that S.H.I.E.L.D. have been systematically buying out the stocks in Stark Industries. And Tony feels as though everything's starting to crumble around him. He has no control. And you see him in those five issues slowly drinking a little bit more
and
slowly.
More and more.
And then finally in this, in Demon in a Bottle, which starts with issue 120, he's really starting to turn to it whenever anything goes wrong.
And that cover for the issue that is actually called Demon in a Bottle is famous with the Stark with the 5 o'clock shadow and the
he's still in the Iron Man suit. Yeah. He's got the helmet to one side. He's got the bottle of whiskey and the 5 o'clock shadow.
Yeah, it's a famous cover. It's just this is in Marvel terminology. This is their Speedy on heroin. It was basically where Marvel said, you know what, time to grow up.
This is a little bit later than that. This is about 10 years or almost 10 years after that. But this is contemporary with Claremont's X-Men. This is around the same time he's doing that. So big things are happening in Marvel. They're really modernizing their characters.
This is only 5 years after Speedy's heroin addiction. This is 79 as opposed to 74.
There you go.
Yeah, so it's not that far away. DC broke the ground. Marvel came up and basically is when Marvel grew up.
Yeah. Look, you know, and Marvel did a lot of growing up then because in 75... Claremont took over X-Men and they kind of went from there. So this is really an era where everything's moving very quickly. When Michelinie and Leighton finished their run in 82 on this book, it was about the time that Claremont was really taking off with X-Men as well. So this is the point where Marvel comes back on top.
Yes.
This is the point where they're really owning everything that they're doing.
This was also the turning point for Iron Man because up until now, Iron Man was a B-list character. I love the fact that this was my era of comics. So I read this in first run and going back to this is really interesting. But what I thought was really fascinating about this was the era of the Avengers as well, because we actually have that little hint of the Avengers at one point where he is the boss of the Avengers, not Iron Man. Tony Stark is the boss of the Avengers. Avengers Mansion is his mansion. Jarvis is his butler. And they refer to him as being the leader of the Avengers, which I thought was all very, very interesting. You were going to say?
I don't think I was going to say anything. Okay. I think that there's a lot of stuff that's introduced in this era as well. I mean, as I said before, Rhodey's introduced, and he's just introduced as the trusty pilot.
Yep.
And then a few issues later, he starts to become... more of the action man companion for Tony Stark. They introduce the character of Bethany, who comes back later as well. They introduce Justin Hammer as the rival, who, if you've only seen the movies, he's much older in this. And I think, Dave, you said before the show, he looks very much like Khan.
Yeah.
Looks Ricardo Montalban and this sort of thing. And like he's introduced in this as having like this giant floating, town in the middle of armored town in the middle of the ocean, where he has all of his minions like Whiplash, which is something that they pulled
from. That was a great reveal too, when Tony tries to escape, climbs the wall and then looks over and they pull back to show you ocean. Yeah,
it's great. But there's stuff like that. It was really, really clever layouts, really, really clever plotting. You look at it, Leighton and Michelinie get co-plotting, co-scripting credits because, this is the Marvel method. So Leighton's kind of doing the plot, is laying it out and doing the plots with Michelinie because they kind of, that's the way they work. It wasn't full scripts. It was the old Marvel method. The other thing that is really fascinating about this era as well is that they retell the origin of Iron Man, which is another way of us sort of knowing that this was them kind of planting their flag down again and saying, yep, this is us making sure, this is us putting our mark back on Iron Man. We're saying this is his origin. We're telling the definitive Iron Man story here. What they did in that origin issue, which is basically him flying at the start of it, thinking, remember the time when...
I've got a long flight ahead of me. I just have a think back.
I'll think back to how I first got into one of these things. and it's almost panel for panel for those original comics, for the original Stan Lee comic. I went back and had a look at it. And the layouts are almost identical. They've updated it. But some of the poses, like, the original Iron Man suit down on one knee or him laying out on the table or the character, some of the dialogue is just tweaked enough slightly, but the origin story is all still there. And what's interesting enough, they haven't really messed with that origin story since then in the 30 years or
even,
more.
Even the movie doesn't mess with it that much.
No.
It just transplants it.
Sets it into a different place.
Yeah. And it really is. It's kind of like, yep, I couldn't kill you now. I'm going to have to come back for you later. It's exactly what happened in the movie. Right down to the point where the last thing he does before he flies off is fire a rock, uh, flamethrower.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, almost everything is identical. And that's what I think is wonderful about this run, is that it's so definitive that they really haven't had to change
You can't change it.
And they had to put that origin in to make it definitive, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Because that's to me why Iron Man is one of my favorite characters, because he's synonymous with intelligence.
Yes.
Like, it's not his powers, his ability. It's his intelligence that allows him to have that. Right down to his inventions keeping him alive.
Yes.
You know, like he is constantly walking around as a living embodiment of how intelligence is beyond.
We also have a hint in this book. We also
that's what makes the alcoholism so powerful to me. Is because that's the thing. It's not supervillains. It's not like Justin Hammer controlling the suit.
Yeah,
it's something that directly affects how his brain functions.
Well, and you notice him throughout this. He's constantly dropping things like, "Oh wow, I forgot to open the window on my way out," and all this stuff. He really starts to slip. Like, he's not doing either job very well.
Well, I was about to say, there's also a hint or a shape of Iron Man 3 in here as well, where after the crime is committed, where the suit is taken over and a person is killed, he has to go out as Tony Stark. Yes. Not as Iron Man. And it's that whole moment in Iron Man 3 where he's not in the suit and he's just doing what he does, you know? And so you sit there and you go, I can even see where they've got a germ of an idea from this of going to storm the stronghold of the bad guy as himself, not as Iron Man. You know?
The other thing we'll have to say about this, and we've said it before when we're talking about classic runs, the aforementioned Green Lantern, Green Arrow, when we looked at the Amazing Spider-Man, Chris Claremont run, these are books that are very much of their time.
Yes.
While the stories themselves are timeless, the dialogue maybe not so much.
The depiction let's say this is a very American art form in this particular case, and the depiction of foreigners is less than flattering. Well,
we're all against the commies, and we're
all against the commies. And when they're French in Vietnam, it's like there's the Charlies over there. But I thought the most heinous one of all, though, was when they're in Monaco.
Oh, the French,
and it's the way the French are defended. Yeah.
And there's the how trustworthy the police are.
Yes.
You know, like, actually,
Tony, you know, it's Iron Man at that stage, right? Because they're not the same.
Oh, yeah, that scene. That was so weird.
Yeah, where it's like, oh, well, I guess you killed a guy, but
he goes, that's not really you'll just character. Have to believe me when I say that the suit was taken over and I didn't really do it and I'd really like to get the bottom of it. Okay.
Well, you've never steered us wrong before. Off you go, sunshine.
Gee shucks, Tony. You
know? Actually, it's funny how much, when you think about how much Iron Man 2 did take from this, even Monaco.
Yeah,
they went Monaco. All that stuff. The other thing is, Dave, you were saying this before the show, just how dense the comics were in this. Or maybe you were saying
it,
Dave.
No, I was saying
just how dense these comics were. How much dialogue there is panel for panel. It was very much tell you and show you.
Well, the books were longer in those days. They're about 30-something pages as opposed to the 22 pages today. And yeah, you're right. It was there's a lot of description and a lot of dialogue, and it's just really, they pack a lot into those pages. It takes a lot longer to read them. I can pick up Batgirl now, and I can polish off a Batgirl comic book in 15 minutes.
If that. Yeah.
This took me the better part of a day and a half to get through. And if this was...
And you have to take breaks. You have to.
You have to.
I mean, look, again, we've said this many times. These books weren't originally intended to be read as chunky graphic novels. They were serialized. They were a month apart.
And this
they
does
were longer because, you know, it was a big deal going into comic book.
Look at Year Zero, we were talking about before. Like, I don't mean to make a joke, but it's the same. Like, Year Zero has just as much words in it as this does.
That's true.
You know?
But this is... we made the same comment when we did Daredevil, when we did the Frank Miller run of Daredevil. There's a repetitive nature to 70s books as well, because they were never planned to be collections. They were only planned to be read monthly. Every issue, they have to go back and recap, and they have to, every time they use one of their tools, they have to then re-mention what the tool is they're using, because every issue was considered to be somebody's
first. In fact, there are some issues where they flat out, like, and it happens at least twice, where they tell you the entire story to date in the first two pages again, and it's kind of like, I literally just read this.
Yeah.
You know? And it's kind of like that thing that J.K., when I was reading the Harry Potter books back to back a few years ago, the first 50 pages would be her describing what happened in the last book. It was like, dude, you do realize your book hasn't gone out of print. Well, in the case of these, they might have actually.
Yeah, it was a very different. It was a different era.
Because remember, every comic is somebody's first comic.
Exactly.
Now, one thing I'll quickly mention is the apart from the politics, the alcoholism element of it looked very heavy handed. The same way that Stan Lee dealt with drugs in The Amazing Spider-Man. The same way
alcohol.
Drinking is bad, children. Don't do
and
it.
And one night of talking with a beautiful woman and you'll be clean.
Yeah. It would work for me. But I love it when he's about to relapse, he goes back. Yeah, and there's like two bottles of whiskey left. If you're trying to clean a dude up, don't leave half-open bottles of whiskey lying around for the guy. Now, a few years after this, when they finish and Dennis O'Neill takes over the book, he has a relapse. Like, you know, I think it's because Justin Hammer comes back and there's all the stuff going. It drives him to drink again. So, you know, this isn't over.
And I believe it's actually the relapse that is what leads to Rhodes taking up the Iron Man mantle, because Stark basically loses everything. There's a point in the early 80s where he loses everything. He loses control of his company. He loses the ability to be Iron Man because he literally can't control himself and everything else. And it's when he confides in Rhodes that he is Iron Man and gives him Iron Man. So this is pre-War Machine. Mm-hmm. Rhodes only became War Machine because Tony Stark cleaned up and came back. And then he gave Rhodes War Machine to continue being a hero. But for a great deal of time, Rhodes was Iron Man.
Mm-hmm. And with this, how far away are the Avengers?
Oh, what do you mean? The
like Tony Stark becoming part of the Avengers?
He's already part at this stage.
Okay.
But it's kind of like, you know, it's one of those things. They have separate adventures, but they come together.
Iron Man was actually the leader of the Avengers, and that's why there's that
one. Well, I guess I mean to ask, like, when does Iron Man reveal himself to be Tony Stark?
That I don't know, actually.
I can't remember. And it's actually much...
Because in this, it's like he's not really part of the Avengers. Iron Man is, but...
Tony Stark is the owner of it. He's the bankroll behind it all. Well, what I loved about this comic book is it seems that Tony Stark bankroll rolls all superheroes.
Yeah.
And Justin Hammer seems to bankroll all supervillains. Yeah.
it's quite a neat arrangement, actually.
It is. These two rich millionaires just going, yeah, they're costume people. Let's bankroll them.
It's almost cute when you put it that way. Hey? Yeah.
What I love, though, is I also love the relationship with Captain America, because the Captain America we know today is like stoic leader, you know, everybody follows him. And in this one, it's like, well, I'll be taking a leave of absence, so Cap, you'll be taking charge. And it's like, are you sure you're up to it?
That was my favorite bit, where it was like, Cap, can you teach me how to fight?
And in one day.
Yes. Yeah. And he walks out of the boxing ring and he's like, well, now I have the ability to fight.
And he does. It works. Yeah. You know, simpler times then. People,
I love it, though, because you think about it in context. And it's
I don't know if you got this lined up, David, but this is absolutely Comics 101.
This is Comics 101.
That's exactly what it is.
Absolutely. Absolutely indubitably.
Yeah, look, we have to recommend this book. In fact, the Ultimate Marvel graphic novel collection, this is volume one.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful reprint. It's just gorgeous.
Really, really. I've got the Marvel Omnibus Edition, which includes all the Michelinie Leighton stuff, which is beautiful as well. Big. I didn't bring it with me today because I would have...
Oh, they're like a brick.
Yeah, I would have done my back bringing it over. Yeah. I already have to bring a laptop and an iPad over and this beautiful graphic novel. But if you're into Iron Man and you want to get a classic Iron Man story, this is the one to get.
Yes.
This Demon in a Bottle has been reprinted in lots of different forms. It's in trade paperback. You will have no problems finding a copy.
So this is still volume one of Iron Man, I believe?
Yes, very much. It's Invincible Iron Man issues 120 through to 128.
And this is the classic, I think it's Mark III or Mark IV armor that he's wearing, which actually, he puts the gauntlets on and the yellow mesh metal would actually run up his arm.
Yeah.
And it was very unrealistic.
He's got it
in a
briefcase.
And he carries the whole thing in a briefcase, which really doesn't make any sense at all. But it's the
seems to collapse and be like flat like cloth.
Well, because apparently when he's not wearing it, they actually do explain this in the 80s. They talk about the material. When he's not wearing it, it goes soft. So it's like it hardens and goes soft. And so basically the helmet flattens out and stuff like that. And it's all this very make-believe. It wasn't until his comeback after the alcoholism, I'm going from memory from 30 years ago, people, so bear with me. But after his comeback, when he decides to be Iron Man again, is when he gets that white and red suit, which was much more mechanical looking like the movies. Yes. And it's actually got 80s shoulder pads. but it's actually much more mechanical looking.
Right.
And that's when he makes his big comeback. And I think it's also when he relocates to the West Coast.
Cool.
Yeah, so, and that's after Rhodes becomes War Machine and all that sort of stuff. And that was a really good era of comics, too. That's some really good stuff in there.
Look, we're probably going to go a little bit over time this week because we have no idea what our counter's doing at this point.
No,
we've stopped and started a few times. So,
David, I think it's time you hit up the girl from Ipanema because we have a little bit of feedback. Hey, guys.
Hey.
We're actually working on a bit of a project at the moment, which we can't talk too much about until we hear some more about it. But I actually asked a couple of creator friends to give us some comments about the show, and I have to read out one of them.
Well, you've read one, right?
I read one of them, which is Laramie's Beautiful, and I'm going to read the other two. What the hell?
Okay.
One of them is from Garth Jones, who's the homebrew Vampire Bullets Brains Trust. This is the anthology I keep banging on about. But we were quoted on the last issue. This is his quote about us. The Behind the Panels lads are 12th Dan Masters of Pop Cultural Arcana, specialising in weapons-grade geek punditry deployed with rakish pants tighteningly debonair aplomb. I cannot get enough.
There, it's awesome.
That's like that. If we had T-shirts and things, that would go all over. That would be our pull quote.
Wait, we do have T-shirts. I'm printing that on a T-shirt.
The other one is from our very good friend, Paul Bedford, writer of The List.
Amazing man.
Who gave us an amazing quote. He says, the spectrum of Behind the Panels is vast. They have interviewed the greats of comic scene, feature the most commercial of works, and yet afford equal support and exposure to local and or independent creators. This is not to be taken lightly. The show is a professional, informative, incisive, and the three hosts bounce off each other, adding compliment or critical remark where they see fit, which is refreshing. This is not a standout. This is not just a standout pop culture podcast. It's a standout podcast in its own right.
Professional?
Well, yeah. Well, that's questionable sometimes. Yeah, but
thank you, Paul.
But Paul, thank you so much. So if you want to find their stuff, the three books I mentioned were Homebrew Vampire Bullets, The List graphic novel, or Laramie Taylor's A Voice in the Dark. Go and check out all three of those, because if all of you listening each buy one copy of all those things, then dude, you've just made all those people's days.
I think. Absolutely. So,
and you all buy one for friends. You go, it's just how it works. It's all caring.
Word of
it's
mouth, people. Word of mouth.
It's all about greatest the mouth, form of advertising. The word.
Well, greatest form of advertising in the world is you to go to somebody and say, I really like this.
But don't just go up to random. I mean, maybe go up to random and go, hey, you know what you should get? You should get Homebrew Vampire Bullets. And I go, what the hell are you talking about, you crazy person I've just met on the street? And you know, maybe they'll buy it, maybe they won't, but that'll stick in their head, and they'll be walking past a shop one day and they'll see a copy of it and go, hey,
that crazy guy, that
crazy bearded guy, you know, told me to get that. I'm going to get it because it's stuck in your head. That's how advertising works, people. That's what we're doing
then
now.
Then you become the crazy homeless, like, bearded guy.
Yeah, particularly if you're spending all your money on comics.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it, guy. That's pass it on. Pay it forward.
Thing is, those plastic bags aren't big enough to sleep in. So
no, those little Mylar bags. Yeah, unless we
really... Ooh! Forgot to mention something while we're in our little advertising section here, just purely because it just came out and I just bought it. Power Girl Power Trip has been released.
Yeah, we did this this just before the Christmas break.
So those who couldn't read it because it was kind of hard to get hold of at that time.
Outside of digital,
a brand new reprint of the Power Girl series that we did complete.
So it's the 12 issues plus the miniseries.
Plus the miniseries leading up to it. So forget the stuff that came after Amanda Connor, but the 12 Amanda Connor issues is now in a beautiful trade called Power Trip, and well worth having a look at. It's beautifully reprinted. So just something to remember.
Definitely get that one. That's a lot of fun. And go back and see issue whatever it is where we
and yeah, listen to us talk about it.
Next week, as we mentioned before, we will be doing Mark Waid, Chris Somni, Javier Pulido, who are the other people on that book? Paolo Rivera, Javier Rodriguez, Daredevil 1 through 36 are the current run.
For those who are suddenly going, wait a minute, haven't we already done this Mark Waid Daredevil?
We did issues 1 to 6.
Yeah.
Way back, I think, when we started the show.
Yeah, like it was way, way back.
It was, if I hit up the Wayback Machine, hang on.
Yeah, it was going way back. It was when we first started. And you still haven't found it. There it is.
There it is. Issue 13 of Behind the
Panels. Wow.
That all the way back then. Wow. We did back when Christopher Walken was one of the co-hosts on the show, apparently. That was all the way back in January 2012. So two years ago we did
that. What were the news items then? Well, since it's there.
Oh, we didn't do news headlines back then.
Oh, yes, we did. Funnily enough, apparently the news headlines back then, taking us all the way back to 2012, the news headlines were DC fights famine in Africa, comics get recognized for the GLAAD Awards, and train your kids to be like Hellboy.
All right.
Then could Spider-Man make a cameo in the Avengers? Apparently. And we're talking about Marvel's stealth reboot.
Boy, we lived in hope, didn't we?
Yeah. Wow, how deluded were we? But that's next week. We're doing the whole, all 36 all of issues. It. So
and can we say next week we're going to be probably screaming and going crazy because Guardians is...
The Guardians of the Galaxy trailer will be out on the 18th of February.
We will have it on the site.
We might end up just reviewing that
Because we haven't mentioned it. Have you seen the Lego sets, people?
Oh, it's amazing.
Go out and get this stuff. It's brilliant.
I've pre-ordered it already.
Have you?
No. Oh. But I in my head I have. I will.
Yeah,
I was saying before the show.
I've already built it.
Because we are real nerds, people. Like, we spent about 15 minutes looking at the Guardians merchandise.
Yeah, we are proper nerds.
Yeah.
Let's listen to the GMC show and you'll hear that.
We are going to buy everything.
Yeah, we were looking at the toy catalog just going, yeah, that's it. Just mm-hmm. order it all. Just order
a lot. All the Hasbro toys, all the Lego.
Yeah, I want the action figure sets. I want the Lego sets.
The Rocket Raccoon mask. I want the lot.
Yeah.
And if you've seen it already, there is floating around on the web a GIF. It's GIF, isn't it?
Officially, the creator says it's pronounced GIF. GIF. I still don't agree with it. I think it's a GIF.
Yeah, okay. Well, the moving picture thing.
Yeah. An animated picture, people.
Yeah. And there was a video test footage of it. It was like, it's about 2 seconds from Guardians of the Galaxy, which will probably be in the trailer. It's just like Rocket Raccoon riding Groot's back.
Ah, it's
firing
amazing.
A gun. It's like, well, that, I think you were talking a few weeks ago, Dave. It's like, just give us something. Give us something to hook us in. And it's like, that's it. That's got me. Yeah, right,
we're
there.
Done. Yep.
That's it. That's done. We're ready to go.
We all watched that and said, yep, well, I'm done. So very much looking forward to that. But until then, you can find us. Well, you'll probably see us squeeing quite loudly during the week if you follow us on our social media.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You'll see me screaming around Wednesday or Thursday whenever the trailer hits at DVD Bits. You can also find me, of course, on behindthepanels.net. On Newsarama Weekly, and hopefully bringing back the realbits.com soon.
Oh, very nice. You'll find me at geekactually.com, which is the parent host of all of this. You'll find me on Twitter at David McVeigh.
You can find me on Twitter at Dave Longo and damgoodcup.com. Also, I've been getting a lot of friends adding me on Facebook, and I don't know who you are or where you're from, so I'm assuming it's from people listening.
Yeah.
And can you please put in there something like, you know, I heard you from behind the panels or...
Also, if you're following Dave on Facebook just to follow him, remember Facebook does have a friends limit, so you're better off following the Behind the Panels page or following the Geek Actually page or the Real Bits page.
I think I'm a long way off hitting my friends limit on Facebook.
Well, so am I, but you know what? Things can explode and suddenly you go, what am I supposed to do? You know what I mean?
Like,
so,
if I don't know who you are, I'm not going to accept a friend request.
Yeah. I mean, that's the bottom line, is that we have pages for that very reason. Now, my friends list is really for people who I socialize with outside
the world as well.
So
people who I've seen face to face.
Yeah. I'll follow some people.
Like, I don't care. I'll follow you. Whatever. I'll be your friend on Facebook. But just, I need to know that you're not like some scammer robot or like some crazy guy.
Well, the other factor is, I mean, I don't use Facebook that often. So as far as my personal page...
If you want to communicate with me directly, hit me up on Twitter.
Yeah, me too.
Because not only... I get alerts on my phone when I get a tweet. And I'm on my Twitter constantly. My job, when I'm not doing this, is a social media thing. So I'm on social media all day, people. Yeah. So I tend to...
And you can find out what we look like on that Twitter as well.
Yes, know? Exactly right. So I think there's photos of us on the web somewhere. There's cartoon versions of David and I.
Yeah, we've got to get a cartoon of Longo.
We do have to get you. Now
we should draw me as like a stick figure and just put me in the...
Just draw that in the corner.
Yeah.
Look, we have gone way over this episode. Doesn't matter. It's been a bit of fun.
Bloody hell.
Look, you know, it's going to happen some weeks. We hit the limit. But, you know, despite the fact that we came into this going, you know, we're going to be in and out. This is going to be a quick one. We're all feeling like crap. You know,
and we should say that we've actually just gotten through the show with massive colds.
Yeah, we've been hitting up the
pouring
cold
rain outside at the moment.
Yeah. One of the things we always get praised from the show is staying on topic. We've just drifted so far.
Nah, this finale is just waffle. Richard, sign us off.
Until next week, I'm Richard Gray.
I'm Dave McVeigh.
Dave Longo.
And this is Behind the Panels.
Don't need rhyme. And My name's Trevor Slattery.